Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is Michael Cohen, and you're listening to the Mea Culpa podcast. It was a big day for yours truly yesterday, as Donald Trump's lies and bullshit finally met a dead end in the New York courtroom of Judge Arthur Engoron, who ruled that Trump and his company be held liable for fraud for inflating his net worth in order to deceive banks and insurers, resolving one of the key claims in the civil fraud lawsuit brought by the New York State Attorney General just days before a trial is set to start. Judge Engoron, in a blistering and angry ruling, rejected outright Trump's request for a range of pretrial victories, calling his arguments rehashed and erroneous. Judge Engoron's ruling on Monday is also complete rejection of Trump's bullshit arguments that he didn't inflate the values of his golf courses, his hotels, homes, Mar-a-Lago, and Seven Springs on his financial statements. And I quote, "In defendant's world, rent-regulated apartments are worth the same as unregulated apartments. Restricted land is worth the same as unrestricted land. Restrictions can evaporate into thin air. A disclaimer by one party casting responsibility on another party exonerates the other party's lies," the judge wrote in the decision. Instead, the judge gave a major victory to Attorney General Letitia James, immediately revoking Trump's license to do business in the state of New York. Attorney General Tish James's office has submitted conclusive evidence that the former president and his co-defendants overvalued their assets by between $812 million and $2.2 billion from the years 2014 to 2021, Engoron wrote in a court filing. "Even in the world of high finance, this court cannot endorse a proposition that finds a misstatement of at least $812 million to be immaterial." As part of his ruling, the judge canceled the business certificates of all of the defendants, which includes the Trump Corporation itself and numerous LLCs connected to the company, as well as the business certificates of any entity controlled or beneficially owned by Trump, his adult sons, the Trump Organization's former chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg, and company executive, Jeffrey McConney. So sayonara, motherfuckers, because it's the death touch. And Engoron ordered that within 10 days of the ruling, Trump and the other defendants must provide names of potential independent receivers. For what? Well, to manage the dissolution of the canceled LLCs. The ruling, which comes ahead of a trial set for Monday, is a significant defeat for Trump, who built his business career and his political campaign by boasting about his personal and professional achievements, and now instead has been found to have been peddling bogus claims of financial success all these years. The lawsuit accuses Trump and the other defendants of creating more than 200 misleading evaluations of the company's finances, as well as other forms of misrepresentation. And it seeks a baseline of $250 million in damages and a lifetime bar on the Trumps from serving as officers or directors in any New York company. In a statement, James said, "Today, a judge ruled in our favor and found that Donald Trump and the Trump Organization engaged in years of financial fraud. We look forward to presenting the rest of our case at trial." Judge Engoron saved some of his harshest words for Trump's claim that no banks were victimized and that disclaimers in his official banking statements somehow render him fraud-proof. Such claims, and I quote, invoke the time loop in the film Groundhog Day, Engoron wrote in a scorching latest chapter of the state's lawsuit against Trump, his two adult sons, two of the senior managers, and the Trump Organization. But at another point in the 35-page ruling, Judge Engoron referenced defendants' inscrutable persistence in repeatedly claiming that the Attorney General, Letitia James, has no power to sue him. Infants legally declared incompetent and persons under certain legal disabilities are not allowed to sue, the judge wrote. The New York Attorney General is none of the above. Trump's legal team has argued that real estate appraisals is subjective and that Deutsche Bank in particular, far from being victimized, actually profited from the disputed loans. Arguments Trump himself has continued to make, including in a court-ordered deposition before Letitia James and her legal team. The defenses Donald Trump attempts to articulate in his sworn deposition are wholly without basis in law or fact, the judge wrote on Tuesday. The documents here clearly contain fraudulent valuations that defendants used in business. He added, defendants respond that the documents do not say what they say, that there is no such thing as objective value, and that essentially the court should not believe its own eyes. At that point in the decision, the judge inserted a footnote citing the Marx brothers. As Chico Marx, playing Ciccolini, says to Margaret Dumont, playing Miss Gloria Teasdale in Duck Soup, the footnote read, well, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? Engoron singled out for scorn Trump's claim that he could have overvalued his properties in official banking statements if the property values ultimately rose. He also seems to imply that the numbers cannot be inflated because he could find a buyer from Saudi Arabia to pay any price he suggests. The judge scoffed at another claim from Trump's deposition. The decision focused on the 5 years of Trump's annual financial statements from 2012 through 2016, when he tripled the square footage of his three-story Trump Tower penthouse on Manhattan's Fifth Avenue. In opposition, defendants absurdly suggest that the calculation of square footage is a subjective process that could lead to differing results or opinions based on the method employed to conduct the calculation, the judge wrote, quoting from previous Trump court documents. Well, yes, perhaps, if the area is rounded or oddly shaped, it is possible measurements of square footage could come to slightly differing results, the judge countered. But a discrepancy of this order of magnitude by a real estate developer sizing up his own living space of decades can only be considered fraud. I'll tell you what this ruling means. Trump is gonna go fucking bankrupt. It's over. His business will soon cease to function as an entity and will be liquidated. Just like Al Capone going down for his taxes, Trump, at the end of the day, will fall not by the sword, but because of the mountain of lies that he shoveled like so much shit. Liquidation means that the state will come in and seize Trump's assets and begin to sell them off one by one in hopes of recovering the money amounts owed to them as a result of this case. It will probably start with the sale of Trump's most precious real estate assets, including Trump Tower in New York, his Westchester golf course, and the many resorts around the United States that bear his name. Oh, and let's not forget about the prize of prizes, what he claims to be his home, but it's not. I'm talking about Mar-a-Lago in Florida. Now, this is the greatest news and almost worth the time I had to do for this man to see him being picked apart by the buzzards. More than going to prison, Trump fears not being rich. It is his single fixation. Why? Well, because Donald defines himself and his brand by the notion that he is rich and extremely successful. Now take that away and he is nothing. He's a fucking no one, a loser. He is the general of a Potemkin village filled with racists and lunatics. So there is talk of a Trump appeal, but the chance of that actually coming out in his favor, well, it's kind of like Dean Wormer said in Animal House, 0.0. So pop the fucking cork, my friends, because I don't even drink, but let's all have a sip of your bubbly. Let's just do it. I mean, why? Well, because Trump is toast. And just think, the criminal trials haven't even begun yet. That's what we're gonna toast to.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And now for the main event. Today we welcome to the show one of our favorite political people from the Lincoln Project, Tara Settmeyer. Now Tara's a former CNN political commentator, a contributor to ABC News, and a former GOP communications director on Capitol Hill. Settmeyer has appeared on ABC's The View, ABC's Good Morning America, and HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. She was named the Harvard Institute of Politics Spring 2020 Resident Fellow. And also in 2020, she joined the Lincoln Project as a senior advisor. Settmeyer hosts the live show The Breakdown alongside co-founder Rick Wilson on the organization's streaming channel LPTV. She's also a fierce critic of the ongoing MAGA agenda and what she views as the GOP's shameful inability to move beyond its toxic politics. She joins me today as we celebrate the ruling by Judge Ed Gorron against Donald Trump. So let's go now to that conversation. Okay, so Tara, let's start today by discussing what will no doubt go down in history as a landmark ruling by Judge Engoron yesterday that found Donald Trump committed fraud for years while building his real estate empire that basically catapulted him to fame and the White House, whereby Engoron ordered some of the former president's companies removed from his control and dissolved. Right, claiming that he committed fraud for years while, you know, building this empire and so on. So what in your mind will be the ramifications for Donald Trump beyond, of course, the obvious, which is the loss of money and prestige? How does this affect him politically is really the question I'd like you to answer.
Yeah, good to be back with you, Michael. So much has gone on. I've been thinking about you a lot lately because of the instrumental role that you have played in a lot of these cases moving forward, because you have provided such excellent insight and information to help this, to explain to people how Trump's criminal organization has been operating for decades. And it's nice to finally see some accountability. You know, for those of us who have been following this, I just said, it's about damn time. Like, everyone has known and has been the worst kept secret that Donald Trump was not an honest businessman. It's well known in New York, well known among even DC circles, but no one gave a shit. They let him get away with it because the facade that he built, to your point, of him being this successful billionaire businessman, and that is his whole shtick. That is what got him elected president. Him being beamed into the living rooms of millions of Americans over the years on The Apprentice, fueled that facade of him being the you're fired, tough businessman guy. Meanwhile, he's been lying and misleading for decades. And so but at this point now, I mean, many of us warned about this in 2016. I'm from New Jersey. I say this all the time. I was very familiar with Donald Trump's record in Atlantic City. his record as a real estate developer in New York, his reputation for screwing over small business contractors in Atlantic City in particular. And I, you know, Kellyanne Conway, surprisingly, was one of the first people to go on CNN. We were on CNN together back in the day when she was working for Ted Cruz at the time before she sold her soul completely. And she pointed the same thing out because she's from South Jersey. She was like, Donald Trump isn't for the small guy. He isn't for small businesses. He screwed them all over and didn't pay people. And, you know, he's a terrible businessman. And all of us warned this, but it didn't matter. It shows the power of perception. It shows the power of marketing, that people relate to the repeated images over and over again. And I think that a lot of that has been baked into the cake now with Republican primary voters, to the point where it doesn't matter, because Trump has spent the last 7 years claiming he's a victim and undermining all of the institutions that would hold him accountable. He's undermined the media, enemy of the people. He's undermined the Justice Department. It's corrupt. He's undermined the judges. They're all after me. He's undermined every mechanism that our democratic republic has in place to hold people like him, professional scofflaws, accountable. So politically, I don't know that it makes a bit of difference for Republican primary voters, but I do think it will make a difference in the general election, which in my opinion is still too close to call right now between him and Biden, which is just keeps me up at night.
Well, should keep everybody up at night. But before we get into talking about the politics, wait, you were thinking about me?
Of course, Michael.
Oh, about this. You know, I figured since, look, you just celebrated your 10th anniversary. So congrats on that. I'm actually this upcoming week celebrating my 29th anniversary. So I figured, you know,
God
what?
Bless.
I've been a good boy for 29 years. You've been a good girl for 10 years. You know, they do have, what do they call that? The 7-year itch. I figured, you know, maybe you were thinking about me, but we'll put that to the side. It's okay.
No.
And even though you're from New Jersey, it doesn't make a difference. It's all right.
I like girls from
New Jersey.
Hey, we're the best. Jersey girls are the best. But my husband is from Brooklyn. So, and he's 6'2", 235, and a federal law enforcement officer. So believe me.
All right, we'll leave him alone.
I'm good.
By the way, you know, I was born in Brooklyn, right? I was born in the Brooklyn Hospital.
You?
Yeah, I sure was. On DeKalb Avenue.
Kings County?
That's right.
Kings County Hospital?
That's where my husband was born.
Mine
was called the Brooklyn Hospital on DeKalb Avenue. Now, Kings County. Okay. My father was actually chief of ENT. Over at Kings County, you know, for a while.
Wow.
Yeah, early in his career when he first came to America.
My husband's a triplet, and so that was very rare.
Are they all the same size?
Yes, pretty much. He has an identical fraternal. So
Tara, I have absolutely no interest in you whatsoever. All right, I just want to be very clear about that to the three front linemen, you know, of the football team. I have absolutely no. You know, it's funny that you start talking about Kellyanne Conway. As you may know, I was the one who actually brought Kellyanne into the campaign. I tried to bring her in early on. I know Kellyanne longer than I know Donald, because
I've known
both,
her forever since 90s.
So we both sat on the board of a building that has the Trump moniker still attached to it on the east side here in New York City, where she was living, and I had an investment property there. So I was on the board of that building, and Kellyanne, we brought her on to be a board member as well. I always liked her. I think she's incredibly smart. I think she is great at messaging. I tried to bring her on early on. Lewandowski had no interest in her whatsoever.
Of course not.
Which makes perfect sense.
She'd overshadow
right?
him.
By the way, anyone could overshadow him. Then on
True.
Top of that, after Paul Manafort, you know, I tried to get her in because Trump was desperately flailing, as he probably should, with women.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely not. They weren't interested. The same thing with Steve Bannon when he first came. And then I turned around and I said to Donald, listen, you could say whatever you want. You can't win this election if you don't have the woman vote. You have no men on this campaign who can guide you for the messaging as it relates to women. You've known Kellyanne now for over a decade. How could you not push her? So he says to me, just go make a cheap deal and bring her on. And as soon as, and I did, and I did, and she was okay with it. The money is not what she was going for.
No, and she didn't need it.
She does not. Between her and with George, they were doing just fine.
I know. I've been in their house in Alpine.
Yeah. So to make a long story short, you know, she came on board and boom, a lot of the credit really should have gone to her and to her messaging capabilities. Unfortunately, she as well has gotten sucked into that dumpster fire cult of Trumpism. And while I believe she doesn't believe half the shit that she says, I refuse to believe that she does. Nevertheless, she's still a ardent supporter, even despite all of the stupid shit that comes out of his mouth, including wanting to take credit for the Dobbs decision and overturning Roe v. Wade. I mean, I don't understand how any woman in their right mind could possibly think that Donald is good for humanity just based upon that decision alone.
Or for women. Just a little aside about Kellyanne Conway. And by the way, your instinct about bringing her on board was 100% correct. And I've often said that I put a lot of the blame on her for Trump weathering the Access Hollywood tape debacle, because that should have been it. That should have been the death knell that ended his entire campaign. And the fact that she did not come out against him and say, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I'm a mother. I have a daughter. I stand for women, because that was her whole brand, was her in Republican women. She, you know, the polling company was all about women and politics. She was supposed to be a champion of women. And I have to say that, I mean, I was disappointed when she decided to take the job in the first place after how much time we had spent trying to coordinate to take out Trump in the primary. I mean, we used to go get pedicures together in Colster, New Jersey, because I lived right down the street from her, one town over from Alpine. And I've known Kellyanne since I was in college.
She have nice feet?
I don't remember. I'm not into it. That's, you know, some other weird fetishes. But anyway, and we would, like, she would exchange the Oppo research books with me that the Ted Cruz super PACs had. Like, we would spend, I've spent Sunday afternoons at her house drinking wine. My husband and I, her, George, her mom, some friends, where she would tell stories about how Trump would make fun of his supporters and how, you know, and George would tell his stories about how he would stiff lawyers and what his reputation. And it was just, it was unbelievable. And then to watch her throw that all away and go for the power, and then to watch her, and then I thought, okay, you know, I understand politics and this was her chance. Okay, fine. But then when Access Hollywood happened and she still stood by him and made excuses for it, that gave a permission structure for all the rest of the Republican men to come out and say, well, I guess we can accept it. If Kellyanne Conway, who's supposed to be our champion of women, she can explain it away, then I guess we can,
you know,
too.
To be
and
fair,
that
though,
was the difference.
Yeah, but to be fair to Kellyanne, she wasn't the real reason why he weathered the Access Hollywood tape. It was a multitude of people that were involved. I was in London at the time when it happened, received the phone call from Hope Hicks. It's a well-known story. You see the phone call,
but
spend
you can't tell,
hours and
you can't
hours.
Tell me, Michael, though, that if she had had the balls to stand up and say, the way she claims as a tough Jersey girl, and stood on principle and said, I'm sorry, but I can no longer in good conscience support a candidate who brags about grabbing women by their genitals. I'm a mom. I'm this or that, you know, mm-hmm. Like, use the real reasons that she should have walked away from it. I think it would have been much more difficult for him to weather that.
Yeah, I agree with you. It didn't also help that Melania came up with the concept of it's just locker talk.
Locker room.
Right, locker room talk. And, you know, Hope Hicks was also, quite instrumental. You know, we dealt with every single major media outlet over the course of a 36-hour period, nonstop, dealing.
Oh, I remember.
It was broken down. I was on the phone the entire night, literally standing on the street while my family was eating, you know, inside of a restaurant with friends of ours from London. And it was while we were in London. I mean, it ruined my entire 36 hours. It did. And
London's a great city, by the way.
I love London. Maybe I love London. Maybe things would have been different. And I should have as well. Terrence said, you know what? I have a daughter. I have a wife. I have sisters. I have a mom. You know what? Somebody ever did something like that to them, you know, I would. That's when I belonged right. in jail, right? I'd be calling your husband and his two twin and his, you know, and the other two twin brothers,
triple brothers,
right? I mean, I'd be calling sure. the gang of three over there, and we'd go pull an old fashioned Brooklyn ass beating on somebody, you know, pulling yeah. that sort of bullshit. You know, that's just.
Oh,
it's just
absolutely.
Wrong on every
it was
single
wrong
level.
All the way. Oh,
misogynistic.
I agree 100%.
It's sexist.
Oh, yeah.
It's everything mm-hmm. in the world. You know.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But what's amazing is the fact that Kellyanne came out. I'll tell you who didn't come out, and I bumped into her yesterday. I hadn't seen her in years and years. Barbara Rez, who used to work for the Trump
yeah.
organization.
Yeah.
She was on MSNBC with Ari Melba last night. I was on with Joy Reid right after. So I saw her. We got a nice chance to catch up. And she was talking mm-hmm. about, the sort of sexist, misogynistic things that Trump used to, how he used to behave and so on. And, there's an old expression, 1,000 Frenchmen can't be wrong, right? If
yeah.
every single yeah. woman that comes into play of Donald Trump is saying, hey, look, he would run backstage at Miss USA in order to see if the girls were wearing their bathing suits, or Miss Universe, or, and that was common, bullshit talk. It's mm-hmm. not locker room talk. It's just
right.
gross,
Yeah, it's who he is. It's who he is. He's yeah. been a misogynist his whole life. He's been a superficial jerk off his whole life. And he's also had a very creepy relationship with his own daughter and the things that he has said about her. I can't even imagine anyone else getting away with sexualizing their daughter the way Donald Trump has, and people just laughing it off like, oh, I mean, it was just, there were so many things. I mean, the Howard Stern interviews and all of that would have sunk anyone else. But Donald Trump has a unique ability that I think volumes will be written about, a unique ability to weather those types of things because of a certain charisma that he has. And I just think that women, there are, like, even if you look at Cassidy Hutchinson, who's been in the news and who I applaud for her courageous truth telling and stepping forward as such a young woman in that den of vipers. Some people say, well, she was still complicit. She chose to work for him. She said she was proud to. The girl was in her early 20s. Okay. I'm going to cut her a little bit of a break.
Me
she
too.
Didn't exactly have all the world experience that a lot of other people who should have known better. And it's very easy to get caught up. I lived in Washington for 30 years and I understand politics, and I've seen a lot of people get caught up and drunken and intoxicated with that power and the access to it. So I give her a pass on that. But I think that, her storytelling about the sexual harassment and the misogyny that she endured from Trump on down.
Look at Rudy.
Another,
right?
No, I know. Disgust. I mean, this is just disgusting. And yet people, but she was, when she did her interview with Rachel Maddow, and she talked about in her book how she went and put blonde highlights in her hair after Trump said she would look better with blonde highlights. That goes to show you that he has this weird ability to influence women to want to be accepted by him. I don't understand it. It's a certain toxic masculinity issue that we have in this country anyway, in our culture, which I think is a whole different discussion. But it just is another example of how we always, when you and I talk a lot and you always ask me, how the hell can women still support this freaking guy? And I don't have a direct answer other than there are certain cultural deficiencies with the relationships between men and women and certain dysfunctions that allow for Donald Trump to have that type of sway. I mean, women were into Hitler too. I don't ever understand that, but there's a certain thing about demagogues, and Trump is certainly fits that category here. But what he's going through now, and the point about how we got on the Kellyanne tangent though, which I think is instructive because it just goes to show you that how far people are willing to go to still support this guy. I mean, mm-hmm. she lost her family over it. I hope it was worth it for her. And I'll never understand why. But will this resonate now as Trump is exposed for the fraud and liar that he is. I don't think it makes a damn bit of difference in the Republican primary, unfortunately. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that the Republican primary candidates and people in the party are still unwilling to go after Trump on these issues. If I were one of the candidates on stage, I would nail Donald Trump for how he has treated small, contractors and blue collar workers. I would have nailed him on his policies when he was in the when he was president, and how
what policies
are
you even talking about? Basically, to rip everything apart. You know what?
For example, the EPA. And how things, right?
Like, he's angry at the EPA because they had the ability to fine him, for example, when trees were taken down in his Trump National, he calls it Washington, D.C. It's not. It's actually in Virginia. But he calls it Trump National, D.C., right? Because, you know, he wanted an open view of the Potomac River, which runs off the back of the property. And so they pulled the trees down. The EPA could fine him tens of thousands of dollars per tree. And there were 1,000 trees that were taken down, blah, blah, blah. The point is, he was angry at them. And so what does he do?
Dismantle it.
You know what? They impede upon business. They make it harder for Americans to do anything.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I did want to ask you, did you hear?
In some instances, that's true, but like not the where he, you know, what he targeted. And again, it was all about him. This had nothing to do with good policy or good environmental policy. He doesn't care about anyone or anything else but himself. And I don't understand why, if Republicans that want to run against him and want to vanquish him, why they don't point that out consistently. Okay, I'll never understand.
So that's a great point. And I was thinking about the same exact thing myself as I watch. I even tweeted out less. I can't watch this fucking shit show any longer.
I wrote
there were a bunch of ass clowns that are sitting there, you know, and I said the bullshit trying to get in there, prepared one line zingers all night long.
Horrible.
You know, it was unwatchable. So I went and I watched the morning show. Because episode 4 came out. I wasn't going to sit and waste an entire night watching these idiots try to overtalk each other with Ramaswamy there smiling like Smiling Bob, the erectile dysfunction guy. I mean, the whole thing was bullshit.
I can't fucking stand that guy. I'll tell you what
I would have done. I would have gotten up there and done the exact same thing that you would have done. I would have attacked Trump on every single thing that he did wrong. Let's start with the Access Hollywood. This is the guy who should be leading our party. This is a guy who's now asking his daughter if she wants to go to Beetlejuice. What kind of bullshit? And, you know, you get a little reaction from the crowd. I mean, you know, Donald saw Lauren Boebert, you know, pulling her, you know, her motorboat and her two-handed fist over there. So he's asking his daughter to Beetlejuice. I mean, so I would be throwing all this sort of shit out there like it didn't mean anything. And the reason I would do it is because none of these assholes have anything to lose. I mean, you're talking about Ramaswamy,
anyway.
1%. You have the guy Bolson, I don't even know who the fuck he is, with less than 1% or 1%, you know, even Chris Christie at what, 5%? The only one that has any sort of number there is DeSantis, and there is something seriously wrong with him. I mean, you know, he's all against cross-dressing and all of the shows associated. That motherfucker had more makeup on than the glam squad. I mean, I've never seen
kidding.
Anything.
And heels.
Could you imagine this guy sitting there? What an asshole. None of them have a shot at any of it.
No.
So come out swinging. Make yourself look like you're half a human being, that you give a shit about America. They all look like they were auditioning for a job.
So, Michael, I have been saying this since the debate started, that this is the greatest reality show competition for second place.
Yep.
This isn't real. You're telling me this is the best that the Republicans can put up? Their RNC is not sending their best, okay? Because these people up here, they looked it was embarrassing. I was embarrassed for them. And even Chris Christie, who is actually usually pretty good at this stuff.
I like Chris.
Even me too. I mean, you know, I'm mad at him for what he did in 2016 and how complicit he became in all of this. It's hard for me to get past that. But for the, if we took that part out of it, I think Chris Christie wouldn't be a bad president ultimately, you know, in the greater scheme of things. But it's just hard for me to get past a lot of what he's done to get us here. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But he debased himself with the canned one-liners. You know, he was doing really well on that litany of reasons why
Donald Duck bullshit stupidity.
Come on, dude. Right,
He's so much better than that. Yeah.
That's my point. He runs on the fact that he was a tough prosecutor. He was a tough, you know, governor of New Jersey and got things done in a blue state. And then you want people to take you seriously. And then you come up with the Donald Duck line. Because why? Why? Because that's what the Republican Party has been reduced to because of Donald Trump's behavior. They all think they have to be entertainers now. Ramaswamy, I call him Ramaswamy because he just gets under my skin because he's just such an arrogant, blowhard, know nothing jerk off. I just cannot stand him. He's a hypocrite. He is a con artist. And he's out. How dare he go out there and lecture people who have had way more experience than he has on everything other than whatever the hell his companies do. No one's telling him how to run his companies. But he's trying to tell people about foreign policy, cozying up to Putin, saying go against birthright citizenship, being his own parents are immigrants.
Could you imagine?
His father's not even a U.S. citizen, I just want you to know.
Yeah. Could you imagine?
So he needs to shut the fuck up.
Right. And then they ask stupid-ass Mike Pence. And look, I had a chance. I spent quite a bit of time with Mike and Karen, you know, over the course of is so strange, so weird. And he's,
yes.
And then you get Mike Pence. Well, thank you very much for that question. It's the worst. But before I answer that, I want to talk about, and you sit there. It was such a shit show. Shame on the three of these. And what the hell was with Varney? I mean, for a guy who is so articulate, it almost is like he had too much to drink before.
I was going to say, was he drunk?
Yeah, because he knew that it was going to be a shit show and he didn't know how to handle. Maybe he had too many scotches or vodkas.
It was the best
of the three of them. The best of the three was the girl from Univision. Right.
Yes.
And you could barely.
She was unflappable.
Yes, but you could barely understand what she was saying.
Yeah, her accent was heavy, and as soon as I heard that, I thought, oh yeah, these Fox News viewers are going to love that.
Especially, that's the whole point I was going to make. The Fox viewers don't watch Univision. Like I would have thought she would have been perfect if, in fact, this was being simulcasted in Spanish television on Univision. She's perfect. She's
which
articulate.
Which is a smart play.
That's what they should have
done.
Which
is a smart play for the Republicans.
Yes, because but they
the
didn't.
Latino vote is out there for them to take.
Now you stole my line. Well, since you stole my line, let me ask you this question. Do you think that history will look back at this ruling by Judge Engoron and say, this is the moment that Trump was cut down to size?
Well, given what we know about his size, I don't know how much further down it can be cut. But
that's an old mushroom pecker joke.
I take it as you wish. I would hope so. You know, my hope is, I hope so. You know, it should. It absolutely should. But the problem is that there's such a fire hose of fuckery every single day that it gets lost. The news media moves on to the next thing and they move on to the next thing. And there's no consistency hammering on these points. And it's because there's just so much going on. And that is the Steve Bannon play of flood the zone with shit. And because people's attention spans are short and it's football season. So, you know, I mean, people are, well, yep. And it's almost become par for the course with Trump, right? Oh, well, it's another case. Yeah. Well, and so what? Now for him, I think that this is, and you know this better than anyone, but this strikes to the heart of his entire identity.
Yep.
He hides behind his alleged wealth and the strength of his businesses. And for him to get the financial death penalty for what he's been doing, this fraud that he's been committing for years, it should really diminish him, cut him down to size, sure. But like I said before, I think he's done such an incredibly efficient job over the years of convincing people that none of those other things are true. You could only believe me. I'm the victim here. That's all a biased judge, a racist judge. It's the system. It's this. Everybody does it. What do they talk? I don't know that it will move the needle at all for the primary voters. Again, general election. Yeah, maybe if the Democrats understand how to message that.
Yeah. And, which unfortunately,
and hammering it home.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Jamie Harrison really needs some help from people like the Lincoln Project, you know, maybe
that's
myself.
Why we exist.
Yeah. So let me just say, I totally agree with you. This core group of Republicans that are indoctrinated into this cult, they're so deeply indoctrinated that even Dr. Hassan can't get them out, yes, no matter how hard you try. But I'll tell you what, I'll tell you what I do truly believe. You may remember my famous says who, right? When I was on CNN. And the interesting thing that people laugh about, like, oh my God, it was funny. It became a meme, right? And so
It did.
I was right. Nobody ever gave me credit for being right. I understand these polls so much better than people know or can understand. I fully understand them. I understand the lies. I understand the writings on how they ask the question and so on. Mm-hmm. All of the polls that you're seeing right now, I say the exact same thing. They're full of shit. They don't mean anything. We know what we know. You could get a better poll out of going on your Twitter account, because you have, like me, many hundreds of thousands of people. And I have a pretty good cross-section of the country. And I know that because while I have my supporters, yes, we love you, Michael, I have others that want me to die and die a horrible death. I hope you fall into a wood chipper. You know, I hope you're ice skating on a pond and the wood and, you know, the ice breaks
I hope you. I hope you hang from a tree and are raped by gorillas and burned to death type of ones. It's quite remarkable.
Well, those are nice compared to the ones that I get. But without trying to go tit for tat here, right?
I'm just saying it. These people are sick.
They're very sick. But I have a big enough cross section to understand that, let's say, 60% are pro Michael. They're part of hashtag Team Cohen, and the other 40 are, we hope you die. All right.
Mm-hmm.
By putting out a poll, I will get a better idea of what's really going on in the eyes of America than these pollsters, because they're calling the same people. They already know who they're calling. The determination of those polls are already predetermined before you even pick up the phone, simply based upon the census of who you're going to be calling. Oh yeah, I'm going to call a Republican who has voted Republican every single available election since 1972. All right, and what am I? They're going to definitely vote for Joe Biden. Come on, let's be serious. We already know the outcome. So it's a bunch of horse shit. My position is, this is all a play by media. This is a play by the pollsters in order to keep
you a horse race
and me engaged in this horse race. All right, because they make so much money off of the advertising and keeping the eyeballs onto it. Oh my God, right now it's 46-46. Biden and Trump in the general election. Let me turn around and says who? Let me also turn around and say bullshit. All right. And I think
polls don't matter. I mean, people need to realize this, that national polling really doesn't matter. We don't have a national election, and polls are only a snapshot in time. So you need to look at trends, first of all. Secondly, you know, you're absolutely right about the media's desire to have a horse race, because they are stuck in their old ways. They are covering Trump and this election cycle the way they cover every other election cycle. That is a huge mistake. This is unlike anything we have ever seen. You would think they would have learned their freaking lessons by now after 2016 and 2020. The old rules don't apply. They do not apply. And so people need to understand that in the media, they have a responsibility here to be honest. they don't have a responsibility to cover both sides of a lie. And this is something that I say a lot of times when I'm on national television. I'm very critical of how the media is covering things. After you've spent, you have three times more stories about Joe Biden's freaking age versus Donald Trump's criminality. What do you think is going to happen? People, when you ask a poll about, you know, well, how do you feel about Trump or Biden? People are going to go, well, yeah, Biden's too old. I guess Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It shapes the national conversation.
Yeah.
So they need to cut the shit because people are not as invested in this every day the way we are. The average American does not pay that level of attention.
Except the media will tell you their sole responsibility is to their shareholders. And this keeps their shareholders happy because they're pulling in the advertisement dollars.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You know, you bring up a great point when you turn around. It's actually not 3-1; it's 4-1 that they bring up Joe Biden's age versus Trump. I would love to put out a national poll and say, "How old is Donald Trump? How old is Donald Trump? How old is Joe Biden today? Today, can you tell me how old he is?" And so, and I bet you 90% of the people that you end up speaking to on the street that tell you, yeah, he's just too old. He's just too old. And we don't want Kamala Harris as our president because he's going to die. You listen to these people that Joe Biden is destined to die in office and Kamala Harris will become, you know, president of the United States. Now, for what reason people dislike her? You know, she has that Hillary Clinton disease where they like her, but they don't even know why they don't like her. Maybe they don't like her because she's a female. They don't like her because she's black. They don't like her because she's married to a Jewish man. I'm telling you.
I mean, maybe for some people, but there's more. I mean, yes, those are some elements of it, but it's just overall that she doesn't come across very authentic on things. And I think that's a problem for a lot of people. She doesn't connect well with people. And she really has been absent as vice president. Most people have no idea what she's been doing since she got there. And
next
that's a,
poll
you know, it's a problem.
Okay, next poll question. Yeah. What is the
but
vice,
that's a different conversation.
Next poll question. What does the vice president even do? Why don't you tell me what Joe Biden did as vice president when Barack Obama was president? Why don't you tell me?
I can
why don't
tell
you tell me? Well, maybe, but maybe you're one
you
out of 100.
Because he was the liaison. All right. I know, but the average person doesn't know. I get your point. I mean, Joe Biden was because he was.
What did Dick Cheney do under Bush, right? The answer is a lot. You know why? Because Bush was incompetent. But we can go on about this all the time. My point is people are just regurgitating the bullshit that they keep hearing.
They're told.
That's right.
That's true. That's true. I mean, so, you know, if you look at Dick Cheney was Secretary of Defense at one point. And, you know, I mean, like, and Joe Biden was a senator for decades and chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. And he understood he was the liaison between Obama, who was a relative neophyte in Capitol Hill, and the legislative branch. That's why they picked him. So he was in the middle of a lot of those legislative fights during the Obama administration. Kamala Harris does not have that same gravitas or level of experience. So it's been difficult for her to take on these jobs, these responsibilities with credibility. So she's had a challenge and it's a challenge. And she is an albatross on the ticket, unfortunately. But that's a different political discussion. And, you know, she's going to be on the ticket no matter what, I think, as of right now. I mean, something extraordinary would have to happen. But the point that we're making here in this entire conversation is that people are very susceptible to the messaging that they hear repeatedly. And so if it's repeated over and over again that Biden's too old, and coming from his own party, which is the most frustrating part about this, as a former Republican and a person who specializes in political messaging, I can tell you that Republicans have it down pat. You stay on message. It doesn't matter. They could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue. You still support your candidate, right? You still stay on message. We've seen this to the detriment of the country, but the point still remains. Democrats forget it. You know, the one, you know, one little breeze blows and all of a sudden it's, oh my God, the whole house is going to blow down. It's, they have got to stop this. I said it on MSNBC a number of times this week. Republicans are handing you a gift. That shit show of a debate shows you the chaos that the entire Republican Party is in. They're about to shut down the government over what? They cannot govern. These are not serious people. And yet Democrats are running around while Joe Biden is out here making history, marching on a picket line with auto workers, while he has one of the best economies we've had in decades, while he's created jobs, while he got us out of the pandemic, while he is not a laughingstock on the world stage. And he's not over here arguing over the cost of drapes in an embassy. He's over here defending democracy. You guys are bitching about his fucking age.
Right.
Stop it.
How about,
like, stop this?
How about Mike Pence is sitting there and he was like excited. He got like a little woody, you know, thinking about, oh, I can use my zinger.
Right.
So all of a sudden it's like he shouldn't be on the picket line. He should be on the unemployment line. And he was waiting for cheers. He was waiting for an applause.
None.
And listen, you fucking jerk off. The only thing that would get you to have an applause is if that fucking fly landed back on the top of your head. Then we would have an applause, right? It stuck its landing, right? Oh, the fucking fly is back, that gigantic horse fly.
My husband said that exact same thing last night. He goes, where's the fly when you need it?
That's all I was thinking. I'm telling you, I like your husband. Right. So let me ask you this for a second, Tara. Because you posed this cryptic tweet yesterday, from Mary Trump, who was also celebrating Judge Engoron's ruling. And, you know, Mary wrote, and it's funny, I wish I knew her. I wish I even spoke to her. She doesn't like me, you know, but it's okay. A lot of people don't like me. But she wrote this, I needed this today. And then you replied, those who know will know. So I'm curious if you let us know what Mary was alluding to in her post and what you were saying.
Well, I don't know specifically what she was referring to. I had a sense of possibly what she was referring to because she has come out and admitted that she contributed to the New York Times story. A lot of the financials that the New York Times used, I think it was 2018, when they had that extraordinary expose about Trump's finances and his taxes and what you had talked about concerning the inflation and deflation of the values of his properties, depending on who he was talking to or what he was applying for. And she admitted that she was able to obtain some of that information from the lawsuit she had against Trump concerning her father's will and all of that horribleness that Trump pulled when her dad died. So I thought that it could possibly be related to just the frustration of how Trump has been able to get away with so much, and that this was something that was personal for her, what she went through with her own family and her father's legacy and what Trump tried to do to her and her family. And finally, some hint of accountability. That's what I presumed, but I do not know specifically what it was.
Understood.
Because that seemed to be consistent for me from what I knew.
Right, because neither did I. I couldn't figure it out, and I was hoping to get an answer here. But can we go back to the debate last night? And I just want to ask you, because, again, it goes right back to the polling. They had a bunch of people that was sitting, you know, a focus group, so to speak. You know, who thought that Ramaswamy won? Because they believe that idiot won the first debate. I didn't see it that way. And then last night, I believe that the focus group thought that Ron DeSantis won the evening.
Really?
You agree? Yeah.
I didn't see that focus group, but I'm surprised at that. I'm sure
they thought Nikki Haley was number two.
Yeah, I thought Nikki Haley, when she was able to talk, when she wasn't being shouted down by the obnoxious preening of some of the other people on that stage, she did her best to try to stay assertive and to not get shouted down. And sometimes women can be criticized for that, but I think she's been rewarded because she's the only woman up there, and you've got all these obnoxious men shouting her down nonsense, and they look like the bullies. They look like idiots. It doesn't take much, but but anyway, the fact that DeSantis, some folks thought that he won the debate, I guess would be a glimmer of hope for DeSantis's death spiral of the campaign. And he slipped to fifth place in New Hampshire. He's not even bothering with New Hampshire. He's putting all his eggs in one basket in Iowa. That has never worked, by the way. I don't know what makes him think that that's going to work this time. But he didn't do any harm, I guess. So, but he's just so awkward and arrogant. And he had that creepy smile thing at the end of all of his,
answers. What is that?
You know, he is a socially awkward guy. It looks like he is in pain when he's standing up there. He cannot stand the retail politics of being a politician. And he really hasn't had this level of constituent interaction, because when you run for governor of Florida, Florida is a huge state. And you have media, you know, media markets all over this or all over the state. You can't really, you don't really do the retail politics that you do in a place like Iowa or New Hampshire. And we can see why. He is not a likable person. And he just is so, and he was, and the reputation for him on Capitol Hill when he was a congressman was no different. I worked in Congress when he was up there as a congressman, and nobody liked him. He was the Ted Cruz of the House of Representatives. Like, people, he didn't really have any allies. He was always arrogant and sanctimonious. I mean, I've said this before. I give Trump credit, or whoever came up with it, calling him Ron DeSanctimonious, because that's really who he is. He's constantly condescending people and whining and yelling at them. Nobody likes that. Nobody likes to be lectured to.
I don't know. The guy managed to win his, you know, his governor's race. Yeah, so
well,
whatever
because
it might
it was
be.
Controlled. It was more controlled. And who he was running against, he ran against Charlie Crist, who is a terrible candidate also.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he almost lost to Andrew Gillum. Let's be honest here. He only won by 40,000 votes in a huge state. That was very, very close. So, you know, DeSantis is being exposed again for the weirdo that he is, on top of his policies, which are just terrible. But yeah, he's just so awkward, and people, he's cringe. It's just so cringe, and the relationship, it's cringe.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page, and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
So who was the big winner and who was the big loser last night, in your opinion? Because they, like I said, you know, they believe that to Snotnose was the big winner, and the big loser for the night, I think they had it as Vivek Ramaswamy. They thought that his performance was absolutely atrocious, appalling. They thought that when he got beaten down by Nikki Haley over, you know, some of the comments that, you know, that he made, that basically she knocked him into the big loser for the evening.
Yeah, well, as you were talking, I just thought about why some folks thought DeSantis probably was the winner, because he took on Trump directly for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
He had a couple direct to camera, you know, Trump going after Trump that we didn't see the first time around. So his consultants or whatever focus groups that his campaign watched about the first debate and about the complaints concerning his campaign, he took notes from that and decided, well, fuck it. At this point, I don't have anything else to lose. Let me go after Trump. And I think people wanted to see some of that, whoever was in these focus groups. So that could be why. He also, just as an aside, he also gave the Biden campaign a really good rapid response ad when he said that Donald Trump should be here to explain the deficit
number. That was really Chris Christie. He just parroted Chris Christie.
I mean, Chris Christie, yes, Chris Christie did it too, but he's not getting the play right. that DeSantis is getting for it, unfortunately. Because right. I said that to myself. I'm like, why is DeSantis's one-liner about this getting the most play? Chris Christie said it first, but that's because people have been waiting for DeSantis to take on Trump. They mm-hmm. already know that's what Chris Christie's brand is.
Right.
But the Biden campaign was smart and turned those comments around to say, yeah, thanks. Because it basically it put the blame on the high inflation that is now down, by the way, and those in the deficit issues on Trump. So that was a smart play by the Biden administration, which leads me to say that I think Joe Biden was the winner last night. You know, people watching this, again, they see the contrast between the way the Democrats and the way the Biden campaign is handling itself. And it gives them the opportunity to set the narrative. They need to be more aggressive, in my opinion. But Joe Biden didn't incite a violent insurrection. Joe Biden did not, Joe Biden is not under, indictment four times with 91 criminal counts. Joe Biden hasn't taken several mugshots. Joe Biden doesn't have to worry about his campaign schedule in between court appearances. Joe Biden doesn't have to explain away his sexual, civil convictions of sexual harassment or rape or assault the way Trump has to. I mean, that's Joe Biden isn't arguing over drapes. He's protecting democracy.
Yeah.
Like Joe Biden's not a laughing stock on the international stage, unlike President Trump was when he was president. These are the contrasts that need to be hammered home. And you look at the way that the Republicans, what they're arguing about, the performative bullshit, the fact that they act like children, they're not governing. You got Matt Gaetz and Kevin McCarthy arguing over social media quips. Yeah. While meanwhile, the government's barreling toward being shut down and hurting average Americans. I mean, Joe Biden is supporting blue collar Americans. He's not swindling them the way yeah. Trump is and has. So like, this is why I think Joe Biden is the winner here, because he is the adult in the room. He's acting like a president. And this gives them the opening to make that contrast. And for the love of God, they need to be more aggressive with it and own it. Own it.
Yeah, it's enough already allowing the Republicans to keep attacking Joe Biden because he decided to go and to stand on a picket line so that people can get paid a fair and decent right. wage so that they could support their families without having to take 2-3 jobs in order to do so, while the CEOs, I think combined, made what? 300 times the amount of the average worker per person. I mean, it's abominable. But let me move on, because you brought up the whole criminal scenario that Trump is now facing, the four indictments, 91 counts. So what impact, if any, do you believe that Trump's upcoming criminal trials will have on his performance during the primary, right? So do you think that his nomination is already a foregone conclusion? Do you think that it'll get more vulnerable as the trials commence, that there's possibly somebody, maybe hopefully somebody that's not on that stage, like an Asa Hutchinson, for example, right? Somebody or like a Kasich, somebody who can step up, who's more centrist and would be able to help to destroy this crazy divisiveness that Trump has, created now in America? Or do you just think it's a foregone conclusion that he's got it no matter what?
It is a foregone conclusion. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference what happens here. Short of, nature taking Trump off this earth, it is not going to matter. As much as I love John Kasich, and he's the last Republican presidential candidate I ever voted for back in 2016. And I think he would have been a great president. The Republican primary voters have no appetite for a traditional Republican. The irony of the Ronald Reagan Library being the location here for this, for that debate it was struck me because I said Ronald Reagan wouldn't be welcome in today's Republican Party. He wouldn't have qualified for that debate. And that goes to show you where the Republican Party is today. And at the Lincoln Project, we have been saying this for quite some time, that Donald Trump, as soon as he decided he was running, the party was fully with him. He will be the nominee. And any opportunity to take him out would require consolidation behind one candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who that candidate would be, because none of them have demonstrated that they have the political will, the courage or charisma to take out Donald Trump. So, folks, it's going to be Trump and Biden, and we need to be prepared for that.
So can I ask you this question then? Do you think that Trump will choose his running mate from that crop of seven candidates? Or do you think that he's going to go with someone, somebody else, like Marjorie Toilet Greene, or go even crazier, go with Robert Kennedy Jr.? What do you think?
Oh, no, 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 no. Listen, if this were 2016 or 2020, when Trump was still surrounded by less seasoned political operatives, I would say maybe. But this time around, to Trump's credit, he is surrounded by very seasoned, smart political operatives like Chris LaCivita and Susie Wiles. They have so far been pretty smart in their strategic decisions concerning his campaign, and Trump has seemingly gone along with it. Now, they can't control what comes out of his mouth, but they can control where he goes, the venues, and some of those, you know, other parts of campaigning. I don't see him picking anyone on that stage. And it would be only because, people are talking about Tim Scott and all this. No. Okay. Tim Scott doesn't have it. He's a caricature also. Nikki Haley, maybe. But Trump doesn't want to be overshadowed. And she would lose all credibility, in my opinion, if she went back again to Trump. Again?
Yep.
Like, come on, honey. You were bad enough the first time. Like, you're the biggest flip-flopper ever. So I don't see that. And no one else on that stage would ever be an asset to Trump. He needs to pick someone that will not overshadow him. That will be another Mike Pence type of person that will just do his bidding.
Yeah.
And I don't see anyone on the current stage and the current crop being in the running for that.
So let me ask you this then, because in a recent Vox article, they discussed how much difficulty the mainstream press has in trying to cover Donald Trump. And in this article, Vox asserts that because of Trump's undeniable authoritarian tendencies have put the mainstream press in a difficult position. Either it describes him accurately and sounds like a partisan rag, or else it deceptively treats Trump and the Republican Party he controls as essentially normal. Too often, they make the latter choice, acting like an amnesiac or an abusive household committed to keeping up appearances, losing itself in the old routines, all right in an effortful approximation of normality until it almost forgets what it doesn't want to know. They write that the GOP debates fit that tendency to a T. It described it perfectly. All right. And I quote here, "We are all pretending that this is something like what we've seen in the past, a normal event held by a normal party, when it's actually a pageant masking the true nature of the Trump-enthralled GOP, a political vehicle for a strongman whose second term would represent an existential threat to American democracy." Do me a big favor, Tara, because only you could probably answer this in the colorful manner that I'm looking for. Discuss this with me. How strange is it to watch the GOP play act this way?
You know, in our final moments here, Michael, I'm going to say this. None of this is normal. And part of the biggest threat besides Trump himself and Trumpism, it has been the normalization of what he is doing and what he has done to this country. He has told us and shown us who he is, that he does not respect our Constitution or our democratic way of life in this country. And he has brought along millions of other people, convincing them that democracy doesn't matter. Trumpism does. Their grievances and their vengeance and using him as their vehicle and vessel for retribution, That's what matters. We need to, those of us who are in positions that have platforms and who have influence, we need to make sure that the American voter understands that once you lose your democracy, you're not getting it back. And that democracy is on the ballot. And trying to treat this election and this campaign and the Republican Party as somehow just a normal opposition party like we've always had for the 150 years, and it's just a difference of opinion on policy. No, that is not the case. And we are, anyone who does treat them like that is doing a disservice not only to the American voter, but to the future of our democracy in this country. So it's really important that we never allow the normalization of this absolute insanity that is going on the Republican side. And we do everything we can to beat that back if we want to maintain a constitutional republic.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought this up, because I've been yelling this from the rooftop for a long, long time now. And it's getting some attention, but far from the attention that it deserves.
Well, the good news is, and... Well, the good news is that at the Lincoln Project, we focus on this a lot. And the president of the United States, Joe Biden, is continuing to give speeches about the importance of protecting our democracy. And I think they get it. And that's really, really important.
We do need to trust what Donald says. And the problem is we just ignore it. Listen to what he's saying, what you just brought up. The first thing he's going to do if he becomes president again, he wants to rewrite the Constitution. And what does this moron want to do? Probably in crayon on the back of top secret documents. He wants to rid our country of the tripartite system of checks and balances. Mm-hmm. Get rid of the judiciary. Get rid of the legislative branch. Put all the power in the hands of the executive branch, which in essence makes him... the king.
The dictator.
The dictator. That's the
right.
Fuhrer. Whatever.
That's right.
Then he's already said, I am your retribution. I want people to understand something. And unfortunately, it does get lost here. That revenge, something that my book, right? How Donald Trump weaponized the United States Department of Justice against his critics. I'm telling you what he'll do. He will go after every single person that he feels slighted by. By the way, members of the Supreme Court. Better be careful, because if all the power lies in the hands of the executive, him, the Fuhrer, the king, the monarch, the dictator, he could do whatever he wants. He'll start tagging and bagging people, sending them, shipping them off to Guantanamo. It'll be just like Russia sending people off to gulags, judges, members of Congress. That's why people better wake the fuck up, and they need to wake up right now.
I don't disagree, and that should be the name of your next book. Michael.
You got it. Tara, as always, thank you, my darling. Appreciate you. You're the best. Let's stay in touch, because we still have a lot more work to do. I so appreciate you.
Absolutely.
I appreciate not only you when you come on Mea Culpa, but also our private, conversations. I thank you for your friendship and for all the hard work that you guys at Lincoln Project do to save our democracy. So thank you for everything.
My pleasure, my friend. And let's keep up this fight. We do have a lot of work to do, but collectively, I think the righteous anger of the American people, we can make a difference.
And so we will.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, pal. And now for today's mea culpa. Judge Engoron's ruling represents a journey for me that began when I sat before Congress almost 5 years ago and warned not only of Donald Trump's fascist tendencies, but the fact that he had orchestrated a decades-long fraud, inflating and deflating the value of his businesses at a whim. For what? Well, all in order to obtain loans and to save on taxes. Despite his best attempts to silence me, I have come through the other side of this journey wiser, humbler, and much more determined than ever to right the wrongs perpetrated by Trump and his MAGA agenda. Now, I say time and time again that the wheels of justice turn slowly, but they nevertheless turn full circle. With this ruling, Judge Engoron has effectively taken Donald Trump's balls and put them in a jar. Bankruptcy, liquidation, loss of power and influence. I mean, my friends, it's all over. The game is all over for Trump. It's just a matter of time before, again, the wheel comes full circle. And as always, thanks for listening.
Mea Culpa is brought to you by Audio Up, Midas Touch, and LSJ Media. Written by Jimmy Jelinek. Our editor and managing producer is Lisa Orkin. Our executive producers are Jared Gustad, Jimmy Jelinek, and myself, Michael Cohen, along with Phil Alberstadt. It may be a new day politically, but nowadays the landscape is more confusing than ever. Donald Trump may have lost the battle for the presidency, but in many ways, Trumpism is still winning the war on the state and local level. Mea Culpa is here to help guide you through the wilderness and keep you informed. And let's face it, we all want Trump, Rudy, and the rest of these seditious traitors to see justice. And folks, I promise you, it's coming. So stay tuned as I guide you through the twists and turns of the criminal process that will ultimately see them behind bars. Mea Culpa, nothing but the truth.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.